It's the Red Dirt Paranormal Podcast with your hosts, Red Dirt Paranormal.
Oh my God!
Jax.
Kesha, I think she boned something that goes hump in the night.
And 3D.
The whole house would be like a Rube Goldberg machine of ass kicking.
Featuring a special guest, David Omen of the Omen House.
It sounds like shit, but I know I can't say that on camera.
Fire up your K2s and let's do this.
Take me away. And like, yeah, pretty lousy EVP, to be honest with you. I think maybe they've taken vocal lessons since. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I look at that episode and they have the sound in the kitchen and they run in there and they think it's the ice maker. Say ice maker was broken for 2 years, so I haven't had an ice maker that works in there since God knows when, so it isn't that. But we've had stuff like that happen. Like I said, this past weekend with the sounds, we heard it on the second floor in the, yep. And I'm nowhere near it enough, see? So, and you heard the dog reacted to the sound that was in my bedroom because he was locked in there. And the dog on the top floor heard it. And each level, you could hear it in a different sound wave. It sounds differently, but it's as clear as a bell. The dog on the top floor reacts because she starts barking and growling towards it.
Yeah, here's what.
How did the dogs react to everything?
The new dogs, my old dog Sebastian, my Rhodesian Ridgeback, who died, God, 9 years ago now, used to bark at the front door as if there was a threat. Now, Rhodesian Ridgebacks, I was in love with them because of a lot of things, but one thing that's characteristic of Ridgebacks is that they do not bark unless there's a threat. It means another dog can come by and they'll just like, whatever. But if there's a human or a presence that's coming towards them, they will respond accordingly if they don't know them. He used to bark hysterically at the front door and we'd open the door and there'd be nobody there. And I've actually incorporated that and put that scene into the movie in my film House at the End of the Drive, where we used him and people were like, that's a great dog. He's a great actor. It's like, yeah, I've heard that one before. But he would sit there and bark. And what's even more interesting is that since that time, we've had knocks at the front door, like, and people go, all right, who's there? They go open the door and there's no one there. And it's not like you can play ding dong ditch. Where are they going to go? The whole hillside, there's nothing there. And then you have the street. My neighbor's kids aren't doing that stuff. And I bet people, and it became a running joke when people would come over, we'd sit there for dinner. It's like you'd hear the knock at the door and people would go, what's that? I said, I don't know. Why don't you find out? They go open the door and there's no one there.
How far are you away from the Sharon Tate house?
About 150 feet from where the property begins.
Okay.
And they took the property from the beginning of the property line all the way to the other end and bulldozed and flipped over the earth 3 feet. And then after that, when the new owner came in, he installed, I think, a 50-car subterranean garage. So he pretty much took, I'd say, close to a half a football field's worth of earth by about 15 feet down and removed all of that as well. Because he also installed some... some apartments, for lack of a better word, the rooms that buttress the hillside. So when you look up the mountain, he built a concrete part of the property of the whole. He basically took a chunk of earth out and built it all concrete. So you have parking for 50 cars, then you have three apartments that look out over the city. Then you have on top of that the grounds. And then you have the big backyard with a million-gallon swimming pool, et cetera, et cetera. But nothing of the original house, of the original Tate house remains except for, I think it's two bearing walls and the floor from the kitchen.
Oh, wow, really?
And I'm one of the few that's actually stepped and sat on top of the linoleum floor of the Sharon Tate kitchen. About 12 years ago when Harvey Weintraub owned the property, he was trying to sell it. My dad and he talked and he brought us in and he showed us where this 3-foot by 3-foot 12, I guess, what is it, has a trap door. And I said, what's that? He goes, oh, it's a crawl space. He flips the light on and I go, 3 feet below me, I'm looking at this yellow linoleum floor. And he goes, that's the kitchen from the Tate house. And it's like, what? He goes, oh yeah, we left that. and two bearing walls to get away with the remodel. And I was like, oh my God. He goes, oh, if you want to go down there, you can be my guest and sit down there and go, you know. So I got down onto the linoleum floor and put my hands on it, like, you know, just to feel the energy. And it was pretty intense. Let's just say that. Yeah, that's
crazy.
Now, when you got that place, was it immediate activity? Like, it just, you walked in and it was already going on?
Well, during the construction, because my dad and I built the house, we bought it for $40,000 the lot with the 13 caissons and the rebar on it for $40,000 on the foreclosure. So when we started construction, when I first went up here, I could just feel it's like going, okay. It's like, wow. Wow, it's crazy. It's like, oh, and that's where the Chantay murders happened. Son of a bitch. I've been trying to find you for years and I could never find you. And it's the craziest thing. I used to come here in high school with my friends and we used to come up here and I would be the one that would always go to the gate, look and just be very, very empathic and go, God, this is, maybe we're going to party or something and have a drink or whatever, you know, we're kids, but.
But you were drawn to it.
But I also said, you know, I got to bow my head and pay homage to those that had passed away here. So every time I went there, I just felt like it was my honor. I had to respect and honor their memories. It was the first thing I did. Then we'd obviously have a beer.
I hate Baggins because he does not.
Does not what? I respect.
Respect.
I respect. Oh, well.
Anything, and especially spirits. He talks, he just probes and tries to piss them off, and that's not how you get a reaction.
Well, he had respect when that 2x4 came flying across the room at him.
Unfortunately, it didn't connect.
I don't know. Maybe it did. He's, you know.
Not enough, man. Not enough.
Well, it might have, and that would explain the weird speech patterns.
But watch the episode, my episode, when the figurine gets knocked over, and he's in the walkway between the den and the living room. Nick's next to him. Billy Tully goes, guys, did you see that on the walkie-talkie? And it's like, the figurine just dropped. And Baggins is like, and Nick's like, the figurine dropped. And it's like, I can't tell you how many times I've been here in this very room about, and as you walk it, it's probably about 30 feet, 10, 15, 30 feet. So it's probably like 75 feet away as you walk. Even a sound traveler has to go that way down through here from above us, from the figurines dropping. And I've heard it, and I've been like, okay, I've been in the room when it's knocked over. I've had it knocked over in front of me. I had the gosh darn thing fly across the room in front of me on the anniversary of the murders 3 years ago in front of my friend at 12:30 at night. And he goes, da, 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 da. Can I cookies? Cookies? Can I have some cookies? Milk, please? I mean, I've been in all these situations, and he's the professional, and he called me the poltergeist agent. Oh, my God. And these people bow down and worship him worse than anything. I go.
No. I saw one episode with him, and I was like, no, I don't like him.
Thank you.
I don't. No, never again will I watch a show because he was so disrespectful. No.
To people. After I was here, I sat there. I said, they left at 1 o'clock. Here's the kicker. They started at 10 and they left at 1 a.m. They were out. It's like, boom, 1 a.m. I was like, wait, we're out of here. It's like, guys, it's only 1 o'clock. You got to stay till 4. He goes, we don't have to do anything. He goes, we're done. We got enough evidence. I said, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. I said, are you serious? He goes, oh, yeah. And I called up the next day, say, hey, how's the team doing? He goes, they're all sick in bed. I said, wait, Aaron, Zach, and Nick, I think Tolly as well. I don't know if Billy was also afflicted, but they were all in bed for Sunday, for Monday. Let me see. They shot on a Friday night. There were six Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. 3 days in bed, sick as dogs. I said, they're still sick. It's like, oh, my God. I said, well, and I said to Belanger, I said, Jeff, I said, make sure to let me know. I said, because I'm telling you, I said, this is going to be the highest episode, rated episode you guys have had. And he goes, oh, you're awfully cocky. And it's like, no, I've been on 4 of the shows, and they've all been the highest rated episode to date. For Ghost Hunters, My Ghost Story, Paranormal Witness, and Haunted History. I said, so I won't be surprised as Ghost Adventures follows the same lead. So, you know, I mean, they have no respect. They got spanked by multiple spirits because I can't believe, I would hope that that it wasn't just Sharon getting her licks in for what he did. I'm sure that other spirits, like I said, they sent out the bat signal to the spirit world saying, here you go, free shots of Baggins, free shots.
Yes. And that's exactly what I thought would happen if spirits were real and Baggins came into a haunted house that actually contained other spirits. I thought, yeah, that man is going to get what he deserves from them because they're just all going to rain upon him there.
The whole house would be like a Rube Goldberg machine of ass kicking.
That's pretty much, that's why, and here's the kicker. I know this for a fact that it was pretty traumatic for him because when I said to them, you know, for the next year and a half, they were chomping at the bit to do the Aftershocks episode. And I said, you know, I really don't know. I said, Zach is kind of pissy. You know, he got a little up my ass on Twitter. And I said, fine. I said, well, we want you to come up for 2 days to Vegas. And I'm like, and I'm a film producer, so I'm going, and I've worked on TV shows, and I'm going, why? What do you need me there for 2 days for? I said, I got 4 cats and 2 dogs. I said, I'd have to get somebody here to basically stay overnight to give the dogs, the cats, their food. I said, you know, that's an expense. You're not willing to pay for that. He goes, no. I said, then why don't you just send me up in the morning? You'll shoot my interview for an hour, 2-3 hours, and you'll send me back that night. And the next thing is well, I say, I'm not coming up for 2 days to shoot 3 hours. So I'm stuck in a Vegas hotel by myself. I said, I live in LA. I can go to Vegas and drop a bat. I don't want to do that. Finally, they agreed. So I was up there and I said, where the hell is Nick? I said, I want to give him the t-shirt from the house. You know, one of my, so I want to give one to Zach and Nick. And they go, no, Nick's not around. It's like, well, he's on vacation or something. I'm like, well, and then of course he left, thank God. You know, but he got shit on too many times. And I said, and said, Nick came back here a year ago. Oh yeah, finished with Zach. So I said, when's Zach coming back? Never, ever. I said, when we're doing the interviews, I said, so Zach, we're off camera. I said, so when are you going to come back? He goes, and then they bring Barry out. And I haven't seen Barry in several years. And I don't have any problems with Barry. The misconception is that Barry doesn't want to come back, right? No, the story is this. Barry doesn't want to come back because we had a falling out because Barry didn't want me to have any of the ghost shows here. It was right before Ghost Hunters came out that Barry said, I don't want to be associated with any of these shows. He goes, I don't like them. They're discredit the house. I said, Barry, they're not going to discredit the house. And I live here. I want to have them come here to investigate. And he's like, no, I can't be associated with this. I was like, all right, fine. Then so long, Barry. And Barry left because he wanted to turn the house into a case study for the paranormal researchers. And I'm like, you're not making this house into a lab rat. You're not going to dissect this house and have, we're going to have a bunch of team, we're going to have equipment. I said, you're not, I live here. I'm not turning my house into a case study. You crazy?
Well, you've got enough equipment lying around, cameras.
Right. You don't need anything like that. I was watching a YouTube video. And a man went into a room. All I saw, the only activity I actually saw in the video, I didn't watch much of it, but a man went into a room and he opened a door and then a board like fell. Yeah. And I kept rewinding it going, did he knock it? Did he knock it? No, he didn't.
I mean, go to the YouTube channel and take a look at the one that says, I think it says, it popped up, it says death in Texas. Yeah, let me get to the one that is Omen House interview with famous Mike and the Butcher Block incident video, March 26, 2016. Watch that because I actually brought Mike back a year later to dissect what took place. We break it down. We brought him back in. I said, I want to video you coming in here and talking about your incident and what took place and telling us how it went down. So that's what's interesting is he walked in there, he was doing some EVP session, he heard voices from outside the door, so he went to the door to shut the door. And as he was shutting it, this 10-pound, 2 foot by 1 3/4 inch thick piece of butcher block was sitting on top of a television set, and it rotates off the television set and onto the ground right next to the door.
Wow.
And I said, you've got to watch it because it's hair-raising. And people go, oh, my God. And we then brought it back. We brought him up in the room, and we talked about it. We did it in slow motion. And you can clearly see it's all in the dark, and it's all with the infrared light on. that this thing rotates off the television and comes down.
Oh, that's probably the closest thing to getting blocked on Twitter by a spirit. It's an actual block.
What's this one about? It says a musical keyboard
plays
by itself. Did that actually happen?
Yes, it just happened this Friday night, as a matter of fact. And here's what's interesting. We've done the research on the keyboard. It was here during the seance, I mean, during the paranormal, during the Poltergeist DVD Blu-ray release. They brought it in as part of the props. They took my guest bedroom and they converted it to this little girl's room from Poltergeist. They took all the furniture out. They put in a little twin-sized bed, a kid's bed. They brought in a chest of drawers. They brought in a little tea set. They brought in a little kid's table with kid's chairs. They brought in little girl's clothes. They put clothes over the hamper and some newly ready-to-go clothes on the bed. They brought in a carpet. They made the whole room look like a little girl's room. I walked in. I go, whose house am I in? I'm like,
not my own.
This is not my house. I don't have a little girl. What the flying? I said, oh my God. And then we have a resident spirit named Gwendolyn, who's about between 8 and 10 years old. And that's who we suspect is the little girl that did that. Here's one, because she's been recorded before.
She's funny, if that's the one. She's hilarious. I like her.
I think that's Gwen. And she's, you know, the keyboard during the show and in the event, what they said, girls would come in, goes, the keyboard. I said, what? She goes, it played one note and stopped. And I'm like, I don't know anything about the keyboard. We looked it up on the manual. The cheapest piece of crap Barbie keyboard they had out there. Doesn't have any presets. I mean, any type of automatic play thing. It doesn't play one key. It doesn't do any of that. So they're going, oh my God. And during the night, more stuff was happening. They were talking to the spirit. They had a 3-foot stuffed teddy bear. And they said, do you want to get the teddy bear? And they had the K2 meter on the kid's table. And the K2 meter starts spazzing out until they got the teddy bear. And then it stopped. And then the keyboard played. And I'm like, oh, jeez.
That is so awesome.
Oh, crazy. I'm going, so they let me keep the keyboard. I said, can I keep the keyboard? Please, I got to keep this keyboard. It's a great trigger mechanism, and it'll make Gwendolyn so happy. Friday night, I turned it on, and I'm talking to the guys. I said, oh, yeah, about this keyboard. And right as I said about this keyboard, it starts playing on its own for 3 seconds. And it's on video. The guys go, what the f-? I said, and I'm so accustomed to it. I literally, you know, stood up. I mean, I got straightened up, and I go, up, there you go again. And I did a spin around and walked out going, yeah, that's it. There you go. I said, right on cue. And I mean, that's just so weird. We've tried with a stopwatch. Is when it plays, when we turn it on, does it play? No. How long does it play? We don't know. You know, when does it start to play in response? Is there any type of a set time schedule? Like you play a key, does it play within 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes? No such. It's random. It just plays when it wants. I'm like,
whenever she wants to play it.
Now, yeah, I like her. I like Gwendolyn. She's good.
To try and get any background on some of these entities that you've got?
No. I mean, let's put it this way. Lisa Williams and Marianne Winkowski said there are spirits. Well, when Lisa Williams came here 10 years ago, she walked into the house. She went right to the top of the going down into the living room. She made a beeline eye look to the den and the bar. And she looked at me and she goes, do you know you have a big party at your bar? And I looked at her and I looked out there. And I'm like squinting my eyes going, I don't see anything. She goes, well, Rudolph Valentino's there, Sharon's there, Jay's there. There's some Native Americans and a bunch of other people I don't recognize. And I'm like dumbstruck going, okay. And she goes, oh, they want me to tell you that they really appreciate you letting them stay here. And I looked at her and I go, I said, well, considering I've seen the way that Sharon Tate ended, and all the tragedy about that, I said, far be it for me to add insult to injury. I said, I wouldn't do that to them. And she goes, well, that's what they're talking about. They really appreciate you letting them hang here and stay here. It's like, well, tell them thank you. I said, it's good to be liked on both sides of the coin. I said, of the plane of existence. And she laughs and she goes, oh, they find that very amusing. I said, hey, at least I got friends on the other side when I pass. I said, yes. Nobody is going to live forever. You know, might as well make peace with them than spend eternity like that.
At least you're going to be welcome when you come across. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Are there a lot of celebrities either present or past that live in that general area? Obviously, Sharon Tate, but.
Well, yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, there's a photograph that we have here that shows a silhouette of a man in a Western type of a hat. And a friend of mine's, I guess you call it his aunt, lives literally around the corner at the famous house that Stevie Nicks lived in back in the early 70s, where they were writing, I think, the album, doing Rumors. And there's a song on the album called The Man in the House. And it's a story about that haunting in that house that my friend's aunt lives in. And I was there.
There's a show that I love watching. It's called The Big Interview. It's on Access TV. And they did an interview with Stevie Nicks, and she was talking about that song and the situation surrounding that.
Right. And I didn't even hear the song, and I tried to find it, but I went to the house maybe, 4 or 5 years ago. And it's literally around the corner from me. And I've actually, when I used to walk the hills with my other dogs, I used to walk up there, and I walked up, you know, before I knew it was their house. And it's a mansion. I mean, it's on the end of a small little windy road, and it's, what do you say? It's on like a precipice in the sense that it sticks out into the canyon on the top of the mountain that they shaved off that piece of land. And it was built in the 20s, they said. And apparently the man owned property that extended all the way through the area. I mean, where I'm now was part of his property. He was one of the landholders in like 1924, and the house was built in like 1925. And it's amazing. It's got this, it's got an archway that you go through into this, and it's just magnificent. It's a Spanish-style home. It must be about 15,000 square feet, has a tennis court, has a swimming pool. And I remember going inside and into the living room. Like, you just call it the living room. They call it the grand room, where it had a big fireplace, tall vaulted ceilings, like 20-foot high ceilings. And I remember looking towards one of the windows that was there. And there was this big, big window. And I saw a man standing there with his hands on his hips. And he was in Western attire. And I said, oh, my God. I said, who's that? And I say, you think my friend goes, who's me? I said, who's the ghost over there? The 10-gallon, well, almost looks like a Western style, not 10-gallon hat, but a Western style hat. He goes, oh, that, you see him? It's like, oh, yes, I do. He's letting me know he's here. And he's talking to me, and I can't quite get a fix on him. And he's asking me, who am I? And I'm just saying, look, I live around the corner. I said, who are you? And I'm not getting an answer. And my friend said, oh, that's the guy. And he tells me a story about Stevie Nicks. Well, literally, when I started thinking about it, we took this picture 4 years ago, and I saw the silhouette of this, of an outline of a man standing at the bar with a bunch of the friends of us, of ours there doing an investigation. He's got this hat. And I said, Steve, I said, who the hell is the son of a bitch with the rounded Western-style hat? And he goes, that's what I'd like. And he goes, there was no one here wearing a hat. And he goes, uh-uh. I said, that must be him coming to visit here. Because, like I said, the house is like a light in darkness attracts moths. That light just dropped. My camera just stopped it.
Just to just get him. We're talking to David Omen of the Omen House in Beverly Hills, California. He is a huge Zach Bagans supporter.
No, not at all.
If you're interested in that, you can look up www.theomenhouse.com. Saturday, June 24th from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. You can also get on his YouTube channel, youtube.com/DavidOmen. And this is pretty cool. What do you think, you know, we talk about this quite a bit on anywhere from psychic abilities to what we think happened when you pass away. So with what you've been told and what you've seen and the things that you've had happen in your own home, What do you think happens, David? Do you think when you die that you can come and go as you please? Do you think you can go to the places that had the greatest impact on your life, whether it's good or bad, such as you know, Miss Tate, when she was murdered? Do you think, if she would even, of course, obviously probably wouldn't want to, but do you think that you're able to visit those places? One in particular we discussed was a bar situation, you know, people seeing entities in bars of people that they knew. Maybe it's somebody that used to hang out there all the time. Maybe that was their home away from home, their family. How do you think about that relating to what you go through on a daily basis?
Honestly, first I want to say the house isn't really, it's first of all, when you say haunted means somebody died there, is what people conjure.
Right.
This house is more like a portal. It's like a Grand Central Station for spirits. They come in, they hang out, and then they go back on their way, and some end up staying here. But I don't think, you know, as you say, as I've seen it, it's all theoretical. Everything in the paranormal field is 100, 1,000, 1 million percent all theoretical. There is no right and there's no wrong. I see so much cattiness in the field, it makes me go scratch my head and go, really? Last I heard from Greek mythology, which I always love to look at, once you cross the River Styx, you cannot come back. Mm-hmm. And that's basically it. So everybody is speculating upon speculating. And, you know, it's become a huge marketplace with people selling Frank's boxes, spirit boxes, ovulus, whatever the hell they are. I find them to be a little bit disenfranchising, a little full of shit, to be honest with you. only reason why I say this is because every time I've heard those things, I hear a song or a commercial or somebody's intermittent phone conversation be picked up on one of those scanners, and I go, what the hell, man? I got real spirits talking on cameras and on regular tape recorders, and I don't even like hearing EVPs anymore, because an EVP could be somebody right there, but you can't see him whispering into the mic. I know it's not.
It happens a lot.
A paranormal thing to say. How unparanormal of you. But I mean, you have to take things from a skeptical point of view, because it's too easy to fake stuff and to spend money on a cockamamie device that's supposed to be, it's the intermediary device that's going to contact your spirits and they're going to be able to use it. Look, spirits have shown themselves clear enough. They don't need a god darn scanner to talk to you. And I don't want to hear a gosh darn voice of some radio transmission that you're using. They're grabbing a voice from that word that they want. Oh, shut the up. It's just too much. I mean, you know, I don't, again, here I have voices not even asking for a spirit to manifest, adding their son of a bitch commentary. Goes, here's one, or, oh, yeah. And I'm going, son of a bitch, and Steve hears it. So why do I need a little device that I spent $300, $400, $500, $600 for? Honestly, I don't know. I don't know what happens, back to your original question. I think that somehow or another, there's a, some people's spirits go other places. And I don't want to say heaven or hell. That's a personal or a religiosity perspective. I don't like to throw that in there. But I do know this, some spirits, for whatever reason, are still earthbound. And as you were saying, from what I've seen, because I have neighbors that have had spirit activity in the neighborhood, not here, but a half a mile away, and theirs had nothing to do with the Sharon Tate murders. It had to do with the old owner that had lived there for 25 years, who had died at a convalescent home. And when they moved in and started remodeling, crap started getting loud in their house, let's say. So right. She said to me at 3 a.m, they woke up to the sound of somebody in army boots going up and down the hardwood floors, down the hallway, opening and closing the drawers to the cabinets, to the linen closets. And they woke up and they couldn't figure it out. Then they called up the owners, the people who were the relatives of the person who had owned the property. And the first thing that they had said is, oh yeah, that's our father. He's upset that you're remodeling his home. And they said that that's who was haunting their house. And then they mentioned to me that they had a shaman come in, and she asked him to go into the light, which is its own other story, which I have difficulty really believing. just in general, just that's another story for another time. But my point is that that spirit moved on. Since then, she said, we've had parties in the middle of the night. And I said, and you didn't invite me? And she said, she goes, no, not that kind of party. I said, what do you mean? She goes, we're asleep in the middle of the night and we hear voices of people just talking in our bedroom with us. And we turn the lights on and the voices cut right out. I said, oh, that kind of party. I've been privy to that. And she goes, yeah. She goes, not the old man anymore, somebody different.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Red Dirt Paranormal Podcast. Visit our Facebook page, Red Dirt Paranormal of Oklahoma, on Twitter at RDP of Oklahoma, and online at rdpofoklahoma.com.